All right, we're back here with Anders Hallsberg. How are you doing, my
friend? I'm doing well, Seth.
We haven't seen each other since last night. I know I wasn't supposed to mention that party we had, but I thought it'd be cool to maybe throw that out. So how you doing, bud?
I'm good. Yeah.
So what are some of the cool things for you that you talked about during the keynote that were you were just like, this is really cool, and I'm loving talking about it?
Well, there were so many things in our keynote today.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones I got to talk about was .NET Core debugging from Visual Studio Code on a Mac. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at Angular 2 and TypeScript in Visual Studio Code. We looked at Node.js debugging. We looked at extensions in Visual Studio Code and the ability to add new capabilities and language supports in Visual Studio Code straight from within the editor. And then, of course, right after I was on, Eric pushed the button and open sourced Visual Studio Code, which is wonderful. Yet another one of our projects joins the open source community.
Now, this is an interesting time. I mean, like, Google was on stage with us.
It's true. I mean, so about a year ago, we met up with the Angular team at Google because they were talking about some extensions to JavaScript called AdScript that was sort of based on top of TypeScript. And we go, whoa, we should talk to each other here and see if we could collaborate on this. And we went down, talked to the Google guys. And lo and behold, here we are a year later. You know, Google is using TypeScript in their development of Angular 2. And they're actually, a lot of their engineers also using Visual Studio Code. And it really speaks to the power of open source, you know, the ability to do things that were just unthinkable, you know, in the old world, right?
It feels like we're getting a cure for the not invented here syndrome almost, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing about open source. It's silly. It's everyone owns it, right? There's no point in reinventing something that's already been reinvented.
Right.
Just go with the best of breed there and then add more value, right?
Yep.
That's really sort of what it boils down to.
All right, so we're getting some questions from Bill Jones. TypeScript support for decorators. I'm in love. What else is coming?
Oh, well, many things. So decorators, just for those of you who don't know, are a proposed feature for ECMAScript 2016 or ECMAScript 7. They're changing the way they number these releases. And it's basically the ability to do what we in .NET call attributes,
right.
The ability to add metadata to functions and classes. And TypeScript's goal really is to try to provide features from the future
now.
Today.
Yeah.
A lot of these new proposed features really de-sugar into older JavaScript written with certain idioms, right? And that's what our compiler does, is translates that down. And so any new feature that's coming to ECMAScript in the next release, we're going to be looking at. We've already done some of them, like the exponentiation operator in like TypeScript 1.7. Decorators is one that we're looking at. And then, of course, the other side of TypeScript is the type system, mm-hmm. where we are continuously looking at ways that we can make the type system more expressive, so you can better capture, you know, things that you're doing statically.
Right.
I should mention also, you know, we saw today me demo async await or asynchronous functions, mm-hmm. in TypeScript. That is another feature that's considered for ECMAScript 2016 that we can down-level compile. Today, we can down-level compile it to ECMAScript 6 targets, which means we need it to run on something that supports ECMAScript 6, like Node version 4
sure.
or later. But we're working on an even further down level desugaring that would take it to older browsers like ECMAScript 3 and ECMAScript 5. Yeah. So lots of work in the hopper. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, we've come a long way. The first time I used JavaScript was in like my 16-year-old myself website to do image rollovers.
Uh-huh.
We've come a really long way. Can you describe sort of the ecosystem of JavaScript and the kinds of things that are being built today and how TypeScript helps with that?
Sure. Well, so JavaScript really is the only cross-platform game in town today. You know, even Java that was conceived to be cross-platform is really no longer cross-platform. You can't run it on iOS, for example. And so JavaScript is it if you're going to write an app that can run everywhere. And it's obviously in every browser out there, and there's a great execution environment on the server called Node.js. And there are lots of great mobile development toolkits that like Ionic or Cordova or React Native that allows you to build mobile apps in JavaScript, which means you can have the same programming language on every tier of your app and write the app only one time as opposed to, say, three or four times, that depending on how you count, right? And which devices you're targeting. Now, the way TypeScript helps is, well, a bit of history. JavaScript was conceived in 3 weeks in the mid-90s as a quick reaction to Java. Netscape needed a scripting language built into their browser. Brendan Eich built it in 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks. Yeah.
And did a remarkably fine job for 3 weeks. There are definitely issues in JavaScript, but there are also a lot of right things in JavaScript. Uh-huh. The way JavaScript handles functions is wonderful and actually very harmonizes very well with functional programming. And there are a bunch of paradigms that you can use in JavaScript that are really quite interesting. But there are some gotchas. And and JavaScript is a dynamically typed programming language. And as projects get larger and larger and larger, you really need the strength of static typing in order to be able to do program-wide refactorings, in order to find bugs before you run the code as opposed to when you're running the code, in order to do navigation in a big code base. This is where static typing really, really helps. And the cool thing about TypeScript is that we're just a superset of JavaScript that adds static types. And then when you compile, all the types go away again. But at development time, you get an experience that is much more like the grown-up experience you're accustomed to from C# or Java.
So in essence, it's this sort of layer over the top that helps you, because to me, there's great comfort in the compiler saying, yeah, this is okay. In JavaScript, there isn't that. Right. But with TypeScript, you're going to get a little bit of that.
Oh, you're going to get more than a little bit. You're going to get a lot of that, actually. Because once you add static types, I would say the thing that's interesting about TypeScript, first of all, is that the typing is optional.
Right.
So you can really just take a JavaScript file, rename it to TS. And now you're going to get a bunch of errors, but all of our errors are more like warnings. Just like a linter would tell you a bunch of things that potentially are problems. But we can still produce the JavaScript output, and you can still run it.
Right.
But then as you dial it up and add more types, we can provide more and more guarantees. And we can even check that you've added types to everything with a compiler flag. That's sort of like the take it to 110%, right?
Option explicit.
It's the no implicit any option. Yeah. And once you put that on, then you could be assured that refactorings will work.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing that we don't know about anymore, right?
I see. That's really cool. All right, so Dimitri asks, what's it like working with the Google Angular team? I've met a couple of them. They're just devs. They want to do cool stuff.
The thing you discover doing open source is that we're all just engineers, right? And we all just love writing code. And when we first met with the Angular team, it took us like 15 minutes to realize, boy, we all speak the same language here. And it's wonderful that we don't have to worry about all the corporate politics. We can just sit down and discuss the engineering issues that they had. And there was, for example, around decorators and attributes and, you know, what's the best thing to do here? You know, like purely free of politics, right? And it's been a great working relationship. We meet with them every couple of months, I would say, either down there or up at in Redmond. And I can't say anything but good things about that.
And the thing about OSS is that there's no secrets anymore. You're not hiding anything. This is how TypeScript is. This is how it works, and you can see it.
Sure. In fact, you can see our roadmap on our GitHub site, you know, where we try to project out where we're going, not just where we've been, but where we're going to be.
Awesome. So Christian asks, will async await support also be available for callback-based APIs or only promises?
Well, so async await works using promises or anything that implements the promise pattern. Now, in ECMAScript 6, or ECMAScript 2015, I still can't help myself call it ECMAScript 6. In ECMAScript 6, the JavaScript now natively supports promises, and it even has, you know, like, and you can easily wrap callback-based APIs such that they become promise-based. It's really just a one-line wrapping.
Right.
Some things like Promisify, there are some libraries out there that do it automatically, to your libraries, but you still need declaration files in TypeScript that mirror the fact that we're now using promises. So it's going to be a process, you know, where I expect a lot of callback. Older callback-based APIs will start to use promises. Newer APIs will probably just use promises right out of the gate.
Right.
And async await just works then with promises. So it's you know, there are ways to bridge it.
Awesome. Another question, Anders, do you think that in the future we can have TypeScript compiled to IL and run on the .NET VM or CLR?
Well, we actually had an implementation, we probably still have it somewhere, JScript.net,
uh-huh.
Which was an implementation of JavaScript written on the CLR that compiled JavaScript to IL. The issue you run into, though, is that they're two different object systems,
yeah.
Right? And you're sort of getting the worst of both worlds, right? In a sense, because JavaScript has some very specific semantics, and so does the CLR, for how objects work. And they're quite different.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, like .NET is class-based and has a bunch of metadata. JavaScript is more function-based, and objects are just...
things.
They're just bags of properties,
yeah.
Right? And it's hard to emulate one on the other. You just constantly end up paying the price. So I would say for mixed apps like that, my recommendation really would be think about a logical way to break the app into two processes and put a JSON API in between them, and then either run that on the same box or distribute it, if you will. That tends to work better.
And then you can use handy terms like microservices and get an instant raise.
Sure.
Right, all right. Al said, I read about an initiative to create a bytecode, an actual bytecode for the web. What are your opinions on that?
So this is WebAssembly,
yeah.
It's called, which is an evolution of asm.js. We'll see where that goes. We're definitely tracking it, and we actually support asm.js in Chakra, our JavaScript engine. And really, it's sort of the ability to run native code in the browser,
right.
in a controlled sandbox, if you will. And I think it's interesting, but the question is whether it's enough. You know, if you really care about native, then you probably also care about running multiple threads concurrently,
yeah.
And you also probably care about using the GPU, and you also care about maybe using all these other tricks that people do in native apps, which is going to be harder in the JavaScript ecosystem.
Yeah. All right, so Matthew says, asks, what will be the future of VB? Does the promise of feature parity with C# still hold? And I think VB has more stuff than C# too in some aspects.
Well, I mean, the two languages, the saving grace here is that the two languages share the same runtime.
Yeah.
And they also now share the same compiler infrastructure in the Roslyn project. They share the same ID. We share so much that really all that's left is the syntactic veneer. Now, there's some work in keeping those two updated in parallel. And we try to do that work. I will say that we probably prioritize C# at this point, but we are really still committed to keeping the two in lockstep. The team works as a single joint team now. We do a lot of joint design, so yeah, we're gonna keep it up.
VB is still the thing.
I mean, it's still a thing, you know. But like lots of languages with patina are still a thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so VB's been around for a long time, and it's not going away. Now, I think that the thing that's great about the current situation is that it is the compiler for VB is now also open source.
Right.
So anyone can participate in keeping VB up to date.
That's awesome. All right, Alex asks, will there soon be a C++ running on a web page client side in some kind of sandbox?
Well, that's what we just talked about, right? That's
yeah.
That's Asm.js and WebAssembly is precisely about that.
Yeah. I see. All right. Is there a chance of having a C# to TS to JS compiler? Building a shared PCL with models that can be used on either side would be amazing.
There are actually already some open source tools that take C# metadata and crank out TypeScript interface definitions. So some of that already exists. Of course, moving the code is I don't know if that's implied in the question there. Then you might look at things like ScriptSharp, which is mm-hmm. a project to transpile C# to to JavaScript. But there are things out there already that help you do some of this.
It feels like we're getting a lot of questions. It feels like there's some resistance from maybe some C# developers of actually using JavaScript, but TypeScript is the perfect bridge for that. If you're a C# developer, yeah, how hard is it to get up to speed with TypeScript?
It's not that hard, but I will say you really need to get up to speed with JavaScript.
Yeah, you do.
and then get up to speed with TypeScript, because TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. And there's actually a deeper philosophical consideration in this question. When we started the TypeScript project it's about 4 years now.
Yeah.
We were hearing from a lot of teams, you know, that the tooling for large JavaScript apps is horrible.
Yeah, well.
And teams were choosing to write their apps in C# using, say, ScriptSharp, or in Java using GWT or the Google Web Toolkit, and then cross-compile to JavaScript just so that they could keep the C# or Java authoring experience and tool set and frameworks. And you can certainly write your app that way, but you're never going to be best of breed that way. Do you know what I mean? You're never going to be 100% synergistic with JavaScript, because you're going to have to wrap all the frameworks in a C# wrapper before you can call them from C# so you can compile it back to JavaScript. And so when we were looking at what is the sort of underlying philosophy for TypeScript going to be, we pretty quickly decided that, hey, you know, we're going to go for best of breed here. We're going to see how can we be truly synergistic with JavaScript and repair the things that are broken, but not try to move you to a different ecosystem, right? And that has been a guiding principle for us all along, and I think it served us well.
Yeah. I like that TypeScript is not saying JavaScript is bad, because it isn't.
No.
It's just saying, here's some type safety, and we're going to give you a little taste of the future as well. But it's still JavaScript, so still
exactly.
No JavaScript.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right, so Joe asks, I've been a big fan of all of your efforts to stress the value of static typing and making tools, languages, CLR to support this point of view. The idea of the CLR seems to be under assault from the return of native code and JavaScript. What is your outlook?
You know, it's these things, it's hard to answer. I mean, I think there's an appropriate tool for a bunch of different jobs, right? I mean, we are seeing some resurgence of native code, but I think a lot of that comes from, you know, also the resurgence of a heterogeneous world.
Yeah.
Where we have to now target at least three platforms, right? And C++ is actually available on all these platforms, so you can sort of put in the extra hours to write in a more complex language like C++, but then you can hit more platforms. Now that's changing with C# becoming open source and cross-platform, and Java already being, and certainly for the vast majority of non hardcore systems programming, I think C# is a much better, much more productive option than C++. JavaScript is growing up a lot, you know, Node.js is definitely becoming a force on the server now, and that adds an interesting choice there, because again, now you can get the same language on all tiers as we talked about earlier. So, hey, there are lots of good choices, right?
It speaks to the fact that developers today, we're going to start to have to know not just our little corner of the world. In your estimation, if you want to be a good developer, what are some languages that you should just get to right away?
Well, I think if you want to understand the different paradigms, you ought to understand object-oriented programming, and you ought to understand functional programming.
Yes.
Because a lot of influences today are coming from those two. And then I think it's important to understand the difference between a statically typed programming language and a dynamically typed programming language. Mm-hmm. That you could pick up by looking at JavaScript, you know, versus, say, C# versus F#, for example. You know, there are so many good choices of programming languages out there. And really, the way programming languages evolve is we all, you know, every new language is 90% the same and 10% new, right?
Right.
I mean, at most. So, and programming languages evolve fairly slowly. It's amazing to look at languages like C that was invented in the 70s, Pascal from the 70s. It was still used COBOL. It goes back even further, right?
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And all functional programming was coined in the 60s. It's in Lisp, right? So
so we've talked about sort of functional and sort of the other object-oriented. Is there something else, or is it always going to be inspired by those two things or some hybrid of them?
Well, I think generally speaking, there was a time where languages were sort of strongly affinitized with one school of thinking, like OOP or functional. But I think what you're seeing now is that the more modern languages shamelessly borrow good ideas from all of these camps, right? Because that's really kind of what we want, right? We want the best of all worlds. And so the strong paradigms, I think, are somewhat breaking down. You know, it's hard to, like, take a language like Scala. I mean, it's both object-oriented and functional, and it has some dynamic capabilities, and it's a little bit of everything, right? And TypeScript comes at it from a different angle. You take a dynamic language and add gradual typing to it with a structural type system, which actually, in many ways, is very novel, you know, and more closely aligned with functional programming than with OOP, you know. So it's all over the place.
Nice. Yeah. So Will asks, what bothers you the most about JavaScript that isn't currently addressed by what TypeScript brings to the table? That's a really good question.
I would say it's probably the way that JavaScript handles the this type or the this object, right? And sort of the slightly confused way that in particular in old ECMAScript 3 before strict mode, the way that you could just very easily end up operating on the wrong object with, and we try to protect you. And certainly when you're writing classes, it's much better, but it's still very hard to completely close the door without, like, making a bunch of JavaScript code invalid. So we sort of have to live with that a little bit, but we're it's getting better slowly. Yeah.
All right. So Vinay asks, anything new with the reactive extensions? That's kind of, feels like you could answer for a number of languages here.
Yeah. Well, so we now support JSX in TypeScript, which is like a React markup embedded in your TypeScript program. I assume that's what it's referring to. But
React is cool, but reactive extensions, isn't that like the...
Oh, RxJS?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that certainly is supported in TypeScript. I know that there are declaration files for RxJS that work very nicely. And our type system is quite capable of expressing the paradigms that are used in there. One of the latest features we added in TypeScript 1.7 is a thing called a polymorphic this type, which sounds fancy, but really makes it easier to express fluent interfaces.
I see.
And the ability to say, hey, you know, in fluent interfaces, what they typically do is a method returns the object it was invoked on. Yeah. So you can dot and call another method and keep dotting down the line, right? But if you write things as a hierarchy of classes, then sometimes you lose the true type of this. You lose the more derived type because you called a base class method and then that returns space instead of derived. But with polymorphic this types, you can actually better express that pattern. So that's one way we help.
And that is that in
that's in TypeScript 1.7, so which is just about to be released. Yeah.
Awesome. So Bill asks, is jQuery still recommended for MS Microsoft development?
I think if it's useful, absolutely. That's a very small library, right? I mean, so it's, what is it, 30K zipped or minified. So, you know, if I occasionally use it, you know, if I have to do some easy Ajax, you know, or whatever. Hey, I know that method. I know how it works. So let me just tick, you know.
Yeah. Have we as a company moved past the whole, this is what Microsoft is saying you should use for development?
Largely, I would say. But of course, it all depends. If it's a green field, fine, then you can go pick. But typically, we have a lot of apps that already exist, and you're building the next version of it. And those apps have made some technology choices.
Sure.
You know, and so you're sort of mired in history here, right? Or steeped in history. And then so... But I don't think that we have a it's not like we have a white list of and black list of right. technologies you can use. And certainly we're getting much better at using and contributing to open source.
Awesome. Big picture question. It's a good one. Where do you see the future of client side frameworks going?
Ooh. Wow, that's a big one. It all depends on what ecosystem you're talking about, right? Because today we have sort of a strong division between, say, stuff like JavaScript or Java or C Sharp that try to be cross-platform, and then we have these sort of more siloed things like Android and iOS and you know, the walled gardens, right, where the frameworks are really sort of more affinitized with native capabilities. I do think that everyone is finding themselves having to write an app that can run on all of these platforms. So cross-platform capabilities and frameworks are definitely an important thing these days. And that I think is, again, you know, what contributes to the sort of great resurgence of JavaScript right now.
Awesome. There's a cool question from Corey. What are your thoughts for those who have made an investment in XAML to see it used in combination with TypeScript/web technologies in the future? XAML and TypeScript, is this a thing?
Well, XAML is markup. TypeScript supports JSX markup. We've actually looked at, hey, is there something we could do to bridge that somehow, since we're doing a lot of the work already? There's nothing definite in place right now, but it's something that we have a few prototypes kicking around on, yeah.
That's cool. All right, Tom asks, since you talked about functional programming, do you think C# will get macros? What would you recommend as the approach to use to build DSLs for C#?
I see. Yeah. No, I don't think C# will get macros. If you mean like preprocessor macros, like in C++ or C, no, that's not going to happen. I think the approach to building DSLs, I would look at what you can do with Roslyn. And we actually are experimenting now with some metaprogramming capabilities in Roslyn.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. Because we knew all along when we built Roslyn that was going to be one of the possible things you could do with it. You know, is effectively sort of briefly, the idea is you put attributes on say functions or methods or classes, and then you can run code at compile time that generates more code guided by those attributes, and then the compiler merges it all at compile time, if you will. And it has you can do some really cool things with it. You can also do some really dangerous things with it, like generate way too much code, right?
Yeah. So beware of cycles.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. Another question. Any plans for mocking or stubbing library for unit tests?
Well, people do that already with TypeScript and C#. So
you can use Jasmine with TypeScript.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of unit testing frameworks that you can do. Yeah.
Here's a really interesting question: is ActiveX still used or acceptable within the C#.NET? I don't think they're the same things.
No. ActiveX is pretty much stick a fork in it. You know that's. Because we're all standards-based HTML and JavaScript at this point. And there, I mean, even Flash is no longer, you know, something you want to take a bet on, right? Because it's Silverlight, you know, these are all like plug-in alternate universes, you know, that you would host in your web page. But really, no, you should be writing standards-based HTML and JavaScript today.
So just to finish up, for those that are looking for advice on how to get started to write these sort of modern web applications, and in fact, I mean, when we say web applications, you can use like an Electron shell to make a Windows or a Windows-based application
with
these modern things. What advice do you have for them? Where can they go to learn? Where can they go to get started?
Well, I think there are so many great places to start today. I personally, if I had to, like depending on where you are, but if you want something that works everywhere, go grab Visual Studio Code, play with it, play with JavaScript, play with some frameworks, play with, you know, TypeScript if you like. Or, I mean, I think that's a good place to start, but there are so many good places to start.
Well, Anders, thanks so much for spending some time with us. It's always a pleasure talking to you. We're going to toss over to Dan, who's got a really exciting guest coming up right about now.